You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto, and I'm glad you are joining us this fine day. Art Factor, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Are you really?
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Now, you know, for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking nothing but BlackBerry, so it's going to be a kind of a BlackBerry-free show today. Not that we're down on the BlackBerry at all. It's still just cooking along just fine, thank you, but we're going to talk about other things.
That's good.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to talk off the top, we got Julian Saunders on. We're going to talk Microsoft 365. I've been looking at it this last week. I like it. I think it's a good idea, and Julian will fill us in on the basis of Microsoft's new venture, new direction, moving away from monolithic applications. Do you know what a monolithic application is?
No, but it sounds big, like a mountain.
Well, you know, ones that you just install on your computer and just live there for one, you know, and you have to maintain and manage yourself. 365 is a whole different story. And it's the future direction. It's SaaS. It's the SaaS model. Do you know what that is?
You got me again.
Software as a service. Yeah. So it's, instead of buying it, you buy a license, and you it's a subscription, like a magazine.
Oh.
Yeah. So you keep buying it every year. You spend X number of dollars, but then they take care of updating it. They do all of the refreshing of it. You don't have to do patches and all that sort of stuff.
Sounds kind of big brothery.
No. It's kind of twin brothery.
Okay.
That's it.
I like it.
I don't know what I just said. After we talked to Julian, we have Mike Vardy joining us on the show. And Mike's going to be talking to us about all sorts of he was down at Macworld, so he's going to be filling us in on that. Of course, Mike is our productivity guru, so he'll be talking about productivity apps as well. And we are also going to be talking to Greg Bowes about the Slingbox, the new models of the Slingbox. And you're going to want to listen to this, because what are we doing? We're giving away two Slingboxes on the show.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. So if you drop by the website at dottotech.com, there you can enter to win a Slingbox 500 or a Slingbox 350. Do you want to know what they'll do? Do you want to know why they're so cool? You're going to have to stick around and listen to Greg Bowes fill us in on that. But we better get going. We've got a lot to do. Julian Saunders is a computer specialist at London Drugs in beautiful downtown Saskatchewan. How are you doing, Julian?
I'm doing really good. How are you and Steve?
I'm doing just fine. Hey, you know, a lot of people are really confused about what Microsoft has done. And I think Microsoft is another one that's semi-confused about things at times. But the changes that they've done with Office and Office 365 around how we install it, how we license it, how we use it, are you finding a lot of customer confusion walking in the store?
Well, a lot of people don't know that there's a new version of Office called Office 365 or Office 2013 that just launched, and it's been changed from a regular piece of software with a disk to a diskless based system, and it's that for most users they're going to be purchasing a subscription to Office.
Now, so it's become software as a service, this SaaS model, as opposed to buying a piece of software, which is actually, for the end user, a huge benefit downstream. The number one thing is no more updates. You don't have to worry about updating anymore, because Microsoft worries about updating at their server side, so you don't have all those, your software's out of date, you need to add this security patch, that sort of stuff. That's all yesterday's news.
That's right. And so, it also installs on your system for offline access. So you can use the new Office 365 on your computer without the internet.
So let's walk through the process. Now, you want to access the newest version of Microsoft Office, whether on a Mac or PC. You no longer go down and just buy a piece of software. Instead, we come into the store, and what do?
You buy a product key card, so it's the one that's right for most people is called Office 365. It's $99, and it's a key card that will get you access for 1 year on up to 5 computers, and that can be Mac, PC, or select tablets like the new Windows 8 tablets.
So for the average family, say, this is an ideal solution. Mom, dad, the kids, you can all have access to Microsoft 360 or to Office 365. Now, and with Office 365, you get all of the different Office tools. You get Word and Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, those sorts of things.
That's right, yeah. So Outlook is a big addition for home users. They've been used to not using it. And it has a very powerful scheduling feature that you can also use from the web and from SkyDrive. So even if you have a mix of devices, using Outlook for your scheduling is a big plus for families.
Now, does it include a SkyDrive subscription so you get more than the base SkyDrive storage?
It does, yeah. Usually you get 4 gigs for free just for signing up for a SkyDrive account, and you get 20 gigs for the year. That's quite a lot of storage.
Is that shared between the five users or per user?
It's 20 gigs for the main user and then 4 gigs for each of the users underneath. But okay. The main user can allow access to anything inside of that 20 gigs to the people in their groups, so it can be shared.
Okay. And you said that it does install for offline work. So if you aren't connected to the internet, you can still do your word processing. And this is one of the big differences between Microsoft 365, Office 365, and say Google Drive.
That's right. Yeah. And it uses a fairly unique technology to allow you to start using it right away. It's called Click to Run. And basically, once you've started the installation process, you can immediately start using the software. As you navigate through, it goes online and downloads the components that are missing. So it also minimizes the amount of information the Office install is taking on your computer, which for people with Ultrabooks and other solid-state computers, that's a big bonus. Installing the whole Office suite used to take about 5 to 8 gigs of information. So Click to Run is a huge benefit.
Okay. Now, the Outlook is an interesting story because on the Mac, the time and contact management system, calendar systems, aren't necessarily robust, shall we say. do you know anybody that's using the online version of Outlook on the Mac?
We actually use it at my house on both Mac and PC. We've been using it since Office 2011 for Mac when they added on Outlook. We have it on a couple of computers, and it has shared calendars even through Google Calendar. So it works quite well. The Office for Mac Home and Business is also available as a separate purchase. So if you just have one Mac and you want to enjoy Outlook and all of the benefits that it has, you can purchase it for one Mac separately, even in the new Office.
Yeah, you can get the small business subscription, which is, I think, like $6 a month or something like that. And you pay for that monthly separately.
Right. And it's also available as a separate purchase in the stores.
Oh, okay. It is as well. And that in the small business version includes OneNote, which I imagine the base version doesn't.
Right. And OneNote's actually become a free app for mobile devices, for Android, Apple, iOS, and for Windows. Windows 8. So OneNote can be your online notebook that you can very quickly synchronize all your notes between all your stuff, whether you've got them authorized as one of your five computers or not.
Yeah, and that's one app that I'm going to want to take a good close look at over the next couple of weeks myself, because I used to be a massive fan of OneNote. Now, I must admit, Evernote has taken over my heart as far as my notebook goes, but I'd like to see what they've done with OneNote and see how well it works.
I have a plugin on my main PC that synchronizes my OneNote with my Evernote.
Shut up. Really?
The two of them are always in sync. I just have to remember to run it because it's not a always persistent sync. But if I run it, the two of them will merge their data together. So it was a little tip I found on the Office blog.
Because I tell you one thing about that, if you do happen to still have a tablet computer or be interested in the tablet computing, I found taking notes in OneNote to be the very, very nice. It was a great way to take notes, especially handwritten notes as you were working. It was an excellent experience. Even back like 4 or 5 years ago, long before there was all these note taking apps that were available.
Yeah, and the new version of OneNote also adds inline linking to files. So say you have a spreadsheet that you put in your OneNote, you can make a change in the spreadsheet in Excel and it'll update your OneNote and vice versa. So you can put a component of another file inside. So it really makes your notes a lot more powerful.
So if you're feeling a little bit lost, if you're starting to, if you've kind of gone away from the Microsoft Office environment and you've cobbled together your own word processor and spreadsheet and calendar and database and contact list, and you're feeling that things are a little not organized, Microsoft 365 is welcoming you back. They're saying, come on back, you can live within our environment again and still have all the benefits of online life.
Absolutely. And the other bonus that you get with an Office 365 subscription is 60 minutes on Skype. They're called 60 Skype World Minutes. You get 60 a month.
60 months a minute. Ah, excellent.
Yeah.
So Microsoft Office 365, and you can get several different versions in the store. And, of course, drop by London Drugs if you are still a little bit confused, and one of the reps there will be happy to fill you in so you are no longer confused. Julian, thanks so much. You are never confused, sir.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Have a good one.
You too.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Over the Christmas holidays, I set up my new sling box, and I've set up several sling boxes over the years. This was by far the easiest sling box experience that I have ever had. Joining me online now from Toronto at Keating Technologies is Greg Bowes. Keating represents Sling here in Canada. How are you doing, Greg?
Well, Steve, thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So I set up my... Slingbox came out with two new sling boxes in November. And I haven't had time to sit down and didn't have time to sit down and play with them until Christmas time when I had a little bit of downtime. Because in my experience in the past, it took me... it was always a little bit of a journey of discovery setting up the sling box. So I set aside several hours to set it up. And guess what?
You had several extra hours on your hands.
Well,
to set it up.
I had at least an hour extra. I think I had it from start to finish set up in about an hour, and that included taking my time on some different things and installing some apps on some of my different devices as well to access it. So they've really changed the setup and the ease of use in setting up a Slingbox.
In fact, the new Slingbox 500, Steve, comes with a remote control unit in the box, and it can be installed even without a computer.
Yes.
Right on your TV set, right on your high-def TV.
I did that. And you know what? I would have rather plugged it into a computer, I think, because typing in all of my passwords and my account information with a remote control in that little keyboard clicking across, that was the thing that took me the longest. It wasn't any technical issues. It was just putting in the data. It was the thing that took longest.
And it is an easier install experience. That was certainly one of the goals of the new Slingbox launch that has taken place and is now completely underway, and we've got a lot of happy customers with this easier to install process.
So we have
Slingbox.
Two new products that they released. One is the Slingbox 350, one is the Slingbox 500. And as in the past, the Slingbox's main raison d'etre is to take our cable or our television signal and deliver it to us via some sort of a wireless or internet experience to another room in the house or to another place somewhere around the world and allow us to actually watch our own TV signal anywhere in the world. And it still does that. Both of these devices do that very well. But they've expanded what the Slingbox does now. It's stepping into a little bit more media server type environment as well.
Yeah, one of the new Slingboxes, the Slingbox 500, is our new platform. And going forward with this new platform, we've introduced Wi-Fi capability. We now have HDMI in and HDMI out. We also have USB 2.0 for a USB-connected storage device. You can then enjoy your local digital content and personal media on it. As I said, there's a remote control unit that comes with you, and you can also set it up on the TV with this remote control unit. And, of course, one of the features that a lot of people really enjoy with the new Slingbox 500 is being able to see their personal media viewing on the TV right from their iPhone, right from their Android.
So streaming. So there's a couple of ways to get that media through. So here's the thing that we got to get our head around. In the past, the Slingbox, and we're just going to talk about the 500 for a moment. In the past, the Slingbox was all about taking my signal from my cable box and sending it to my computer, really. I mean, you know, and yes, it would also send it to my phone or to my iPad and to other devices as well. But it was all about sending that signal to our computer. And the number one use, I'm not sure that this is statistically provable, but the number one use is so you can watch hockey when you're not in market, when you're on the road. That's probably why more people bought it and installed it than any other reason, at least in this neck of the woods. And that's what we use it for. My son is in Waterloo. He likes to watch the Canucks games, which are on Sportsnet Pacific, not covered in Waterloo, so I can always see, and I can actually see on the Slingbox when he connects and he watches the hockey game, so we're watching that game at the same time. It's actually pretty cool. But that was then, and it still does that, but this is now. Now all of a sudden we're using that same Slingbox as a media server to deliver other content to our screen, our main screen, to our big screen TV in the house, right?
Correct.
So that's a big shift. Now, we would, in a lot of cases, people have Apple TVs plugged into their computer to do this sort of thing, or they have other type of a Roku server. They have other type of devices that they are plugged in. The Slingbox will replace some, if not all of those.
Yes, that's right. It can do so if you wish. And, of course, in the past, we've never had an HDMI connection from any Slingbox until the Slingbox 500 was introduced. So that makes that experience so much easier for consumers to do because of that HDMI out connection that Slingbox has added to the 500.
Now that Slingbox, so that HDMI out means that we can obviously deliver video and audio. HDMI has both uncompressed video and audio sending out, so it handles both the video and audio out to our TV. And you said, yeah, we have a USB connection, meaning we can plug a hard drive in. So if we have photos, if we have digital versions of movies on our hard drive, we can view those. And does the Slingbox have the media players to be able to unencode all the different standard formats?
Yes, it's able to take a look at all of those materials and put them onto the screen as well.
So it gives us that. And then it also gives us the ability to stream from our smartphone or our tablet. Tell me about that. Is it because it's not using Apple's AirPlay, is it?
No, it's not. So the Slingbox, of course, at home is installed on your home router.
Uh-huh.
And when you walk into the room with your iPhone, you would have an app from Sling Media on there. And as long as that iPhone is on the router with the Slingbox, then it's going to be able, with the 500, it's going to be able to then send the personal media, whether that's photos or videos, over to the TV. The videos portion was announced at CES 13.
So is that the same media, the Sling Player that I bought and installed in my iPad so that I could watch my Slingbox on my iPad? Is it the same device? Is it the same app?
It is.
Okay.
It is. The app is going to see that it's a 500 connected to it, and it will do so, this feature, because of this 500 having an HDMI out to the TV, it will then be able to provide that connection for your media off to the TV.
Now, I haven't tried that part yet, so that's going to be I'll have to give that a shot. I've only used it for consuming, going to bed early and watching the hockey game or watching the highlights, watching the news, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice new feature that we've offered to enhance the value proposition of the 500.
That's pretty cool. Now, what's the price point of the 500?
So it's $299.99, and the 350 is $179.99.
Okay, so the 500, now it comes with all the cables. Unlike a lot of different devices you buy, you don't need to buy any cables. It's got all the cables. It's got the remote and the 500. What are we not getting with the 350?
Well, the 350 is actually an excellent value, because when we had our lineup in place previous to this launch, we had the Slingbox Pro HD.
Mm-hmm.
And it was selling for $299. So all of the functionality of the Pro HD has now been brought down in price to the $179 price point of the Slingbox 350. So we are able now with the Slingbox 350 to give you full HD 1080p for $179 versus what it was before, which was $299.
Okay. Now, it does not have the ability, though, to display back to the TV, does it?
No, because that feature is part of our new platform with the Slingbox 500 and the HDMI out to the TV.
So this is the traditional Slingbox. It's designed for you to watch your TV from elsewhere, but the same app will access it. As far as if we're running on. Now, what platforms is there? There's an Android player and an iOS player, correct?
That's correct. You can go to either Google TV for the Android app or to Apple for the. There is an iPhone app which you can use on an iPad in what's called compatibility mode, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You can find on the Apple store, you can find the iPad app, which has really been produced to take advantage of all the features of the iPad and the, you know.
That's what I installed. And I think it was $15, wasn't it? It wasn't free. But it wasn't all that expensive either.
Yeah, the great news is that we have, effective of our launch in November in Canada, we have now got the apps available for $14.99, and that's down from the $29.99 previous to that.
Yeah, I remember that. I think that's what stopped me, was $29 seemed too much. $14, a lot more acceptable.
Yes, a lot of people are definitely grateful for that, and certainly once on your device, you'll find it has great value, because now you're able to watch and control your TV content from anywhere in the world. And it's very easy to do. It's very pleasing. And just this past week, I was in the emergency room at the hospital waiting to see somebody who was in there. And wouldn't you know it, I was called away from the Super Bowl. And both of us watched the last few minutes of the Super Bowl on the iPhone in the emergency room of the hospital.
And you've reminded me of one other thing. There is on the Slingbox 500. I don't think you can do it on the 350, but on the 500, because of the HDMI connection, you can actually go in and you can set your own recordings, and you can actually even watch pre-recorded TV being streamed. Correct?
Well, you can do all of that. You can, so with your PVR at home, whether you have a PVR on a satellite receiver or on a cable TV box, you can totally set the PVR from your mobile device, whether it's an Android or an iPhone or a laptop or a tablet, and you can watch those recordings as well, because the Slingbox gives you 100% capability of being able to do whatever your remote control at home enables you to do.
Okay, now I guess the difference that I'm pointing out is that with the HDMI connection, it's a direct connection, whereas on the 350, you actually have to have the infrared, you have to have a little infrared sending unit as well, don't you?
Yes, may I speak to that just for a moment?
You may.
One of the other nice features we've added with the Slingbox 350 and 500 is we now have a built-in IR transmitter right in the device, so that Steve, this sounds exactly like your household, when you've got the maid in to clean the house, when she's dusting in front of the Slingbox, and if she knocks over the IR blaster, then you can't change the channel anymore. Well, with the new Slingbox, it's built in, it bounces the signal off the walls and changes the channels for you.
Okay, so that's why it's working.
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure the maid hasn't cleaned where it is.
That's right. It's a great new feature. It certainly as well makes part of the installation very, very easy.
Well, Slingbox has certainly come a long way since the first days when it was a total exercise. It was total geek porn in setting one up. But now it's as I say, I think it took me about an hour start to finish. That included unpacking everything, figuring out where I was going to put it, typing in my password and contact information laboriously by the remote control, and installing the app, and then testing it out on both the computer and my mobility devices. Oh, and we should mention that the viewing on the viewer on PCs and Macs is free. There's no charge for that.
Correct. That's right out of the box. There's no need to, because it's not an app. It's just simply what you're using.
It's a plug-in
now,
into the web browser, yeah.
We're now really going to a web browser So you would have a, you would be able to access your Slingbox from not just your computer, but any computer using the web browser that you happen to be at. So if you're at a friend's house and you want to catch a show, just jump on the internet and bring up slingbox.com, type in your password and your account, and your Slingbox will appear, and you can watch the TV show from your friend's computer.
It's a great idea. And, of course, we have to thank you guys because we are giving away both a 350 and a 500 on the show in about a month. So we need to thank you for that as well, Greg.
It's Sling Media's pleasure, and it's always great to speak with you, Steve.
Greg Bowes is with Keating Technologies. He's my go-to guy for all things Sling-related. Thanks, Greg.
Cheers. Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Do you have a comment or a question for Dottotech?
Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Mike Vardy joins me now. Mike is, of course, the proprietor of the productivityist.com website. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, great.
And you just, the reason I had to get you on is you did something that I used to do all the time, except you did it slightly differently than me. I used to go to every Macworld all the time, but the Macworld's sort of kind of fallen off the map since Apple doesn't actually, or a little bit off the map, since Apple doesn't actually advertise and sponsor it anymore, but it's still a vibrant event. Still all the people that are most engaged in the Macworld go to it. What you did differently is, did you drive to the Macworld show?
We did. My friend and I actually decided that we were going to do a bit of a road trip. So we
that's not a bit of a road trip. That's that Vancouver to San Francisco is, what is that, 3,000 miles?
Well, yeah. And you got to keep in mind that we also came from Victoria. So we took the boat over and did all that stuff. So, I mean, it was good. We actually,
you know, they do have air travel between the cities.
We just decided that we wanted to have a good, you know, sometimes it's not just about the destination, it's about the journey. So we had a good time just chatting and stuff and getting, and plus it was good because I was doing a talk down there as well. So I wanted to make sure that I kind of had some time to process everything and make sure I was good to go. It was a great time. I mean, it took, about 18 hours each way, but we had a blast doing it.
Okay, so you went down to Moscone Center, Macworld. And they've expanded it now, I see, in their website to Macworld/iWorld.
Yeah, well, as of last year, they actually went with the Macworld iWorld hybrid. I think everybody still just kind of refers to it as Macworld.
Mm-hmm.
This year was a real interesting mix. I mean, I spent part of my time there and part of my time at another event that was kind of an offshoot, and it was interesting because the floor was, I would say, designed a little bit differently this year in that the stage was upstairs in Moscone West. Mm-hmm. for a lot of the presentations. And one of the bigger proprietors that were on the main floor actually left to an entirely different building, the Omni Group, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But, the busy date was the Friday was really packed. And then the Saturday, once it hit around the noon hour, it started to pick up again. But again, like you said, it's not quite the same since Apple left.
Yes, nevertheless, was there a lot of exhibitors at the floor? Because the thing about Macworld that used to be was all the creative ideas that were on the floor, all the small companies that were just kind of gasping and wheezing along. They were so interesting because they were into such interesting things.
There were some really, I mean, there were a lot of the bigger vendors there, like Fujitsu was still there with the ScanSnap, the Neat Company was there with Neat, Blue Microphones were there. They actually, that was one of the cool products I got to take a look at. I mean, this is still a show where they show off the new gear and the new apps and offer some new insights to some products they're working on. There were definitely, I mean, they have the best of show awards and stuff that they normally give out around mid-Friday so that people can kind of, anyone who comes in can kind of get a sense of what is hot and up and coming. And there were a lot of really cool apps. Like they had the Appalooza set up where a lot of the apps set up. And on Saturday, they even had one of the app developers had a monkey, a live monkey at their booth. So.
Is it the one from IKEA in Toronto?
I didn't see the fur coat, but it could have been.
Okay. Now, is it still, is it all about the desktop OS, or is there an awful lot of iPhone and iOS stuff there?
There is a lot of iOS. I mean, it's kind of, when you go to Macworld, you can kind of get a sense of the consumer, where the consumer market is headed. And, I mean, there was a lot of iOSification. For example, the blue microphone area, when I was at Blue Audio, they have a new microphone that they're delivering called the Nessie. And it's actually more about creating a new user experience to make things easier for you to podcast and so on and so forth. But the microphone I picked up when I was down there is called the Spark. It's been around for a little while, but it's got the iOS built in as well, so you could use it on your iPad or your, you know, or you can use it directly on the Mac as well. But there's definitely like a lot of cases, a lot of docking devices. The Rain Design Studio had a really cool Apple iPad, almost like a stand that they call it the iSlider, and it's fantastic. I've been playing with it since I got home, and yeah, definitely a lot of stuff that was geared around the iPad and the iPhone. And, I mean, yeah, some Mac stuff, some dock stations and stuff, but definitely a lot more about the iOS devices.
Okay, let's take a step back into this Blue microphones, because the Spark is one that I haven't heard of, but I know Blue has been just producing new microphones at a prodigious rate. So if I was out there recording stuff rather than using the microphone built into my iPhone, this gives me a better option for doing like in-field interviews and that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, Blue makes a wide range of great audio products. And, I mean, the Yeti and the Yeti Pro are generally pretty standard stuff for the podcasting set. You know, my podcasting partner has a Yeti, and I was using a Yeti for a little while, but I wanted to get something a little bit that I could use with the iOS devices I have. And also something that, you know, my daughter plays guitar and I play a little bit of guitar as well. So the Spark has got a little bit more, it's a little bit more pro. It's omnidirectional. So you're going to get straight on stuff. You don't have the multiple directions that the Yeti comes with. Same with the Nessie, actually, as well. But this thing is great. It's a studio-grade microphone for iPad and USB. It's been around for a while. But this new one that they've got coming out, it looks like it's going to come out in probably March or quarter two. And it's basically, it looks like it's got a serpentine design to it, this thing called the Nessie. And
is it named after the Loch Ness Monster?
Yes, that's definitely kind of how it looks. Do you remember in Star Wars and Return of the Jedi where that, in the opening, one of the opening sequences where that...
Oh, I don't see it now. Yeah.
The droids are at Jabba the Hutt's palace, and then the eyeball comes out.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't it come out of the garbage, the water? Isn't it where that monster is underneath the water in the garbage thing?
Like that too, yeah.
It does. It looks like that microphone.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's very the cool thing about it is it's got a mute button that you just swipe your hand across, and it has a repeating glowing pattern if it's on mute. It has all the processing power built in, so if you don't really want to tweak any of your audio settings, that's all built into the microphone. So Blue makes things that not only look good, but work exceptionally well, and I think that's the theme that we see with a lot of the great Mac products that are down there, the ones that are supposed to work with the Apple. I mean, anything that looks great alongside your Apple products, those are the ones that tend to do the best.
Okay, so Blue microphone, we're hot. The next thing you were going to tell me about was a case.
Yes, the Rain Design. It's a great little case. I'm actually looking at it right now. It's the iSlider, and basically what it is it looks like it basically fits in your pocket. It's a tiny little guy. It looks like a ramp almost, a little ramp, and you pull out the bottom part of it, and you can mount your iPad to it. So it kind of sits on it almost like an easel, but it's got such a low center of gravity that allows you to angle it in a multitude of ways, so you can type on it, it basically is a lot better stuff than the Smart Cover or any of these other ones I've used. I've used quite a few of them. And the nice thing about it, again, durable, lightweight, and stylish. You can, like, literally, I don't need to bring necessarily a keyboard with me anymore if I want to go out and do some writing on the go or whatever. I'll just throw my iPad in my bag along with this iSlider, and I'm good to go. And Rain has had a reputation of making some great products for years and years and years, and with the M stand and stuff like that. And this is just another addition to that family.
Now, what? Just out of curiosity, what did you bring down? Did you bring a notebook down, or did you just bring your iPad down to work?
I went iOS only for this trip, so I had my iPhone and my iPad, which is, it's a bit tricky when you're trying to do work down there because you can't tether necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to do a lot of my work on my, you know, I did a lot of writing on the iPad and waited till I had wireless so I could sync it across, and then I would post using the 3G component of my iPhone wherever I was. But yeah, I mean, so I didn't go down with my MacBook Air at all. And actually, for this show, it was quite fitting because I was able to kind of see, you know, what would be useful for me anywhere, because those are those devices that I'm going to be bringing out more and more whenever I travel.
Okay, what else did you see that impressed the heck out of Mr. Vardy?
There's a really cool little device called the MyFC PowerTrack. It's a fuel cell charger. So what it is it'll charge cell phones, smartphones, digital cameras, GPS, and then, of course, iPods and MP3 players. And what it is it's basically something that you can charge up, and then these fuel cells that it comes with, they're eco-friendly, and they allow you to, you know, basically charge on the go without having to be plugged into a power supply.
How do they charge?
You charge the device at home, but then when you go out, you've got these fuel cells, and it also charges within the device itself. You basically, you know, you've got these little power track pucks. And they're a full recharge on the go. So I think the ones I have, I received three of them with the device. And, yeah, there's three of them here. And basically they allow you to they hold a charge for an extended period of time. So you charge the device at home. And then when I was, you know, I left my all my cords in the hotel room, and I had this device with me. And when I was on the, you know, in the Macworld floor or sitting up in the media room, and I wanted to charge my iPhone, it worked no problem. It started to charge my iPhone. Of course, it doesn't charge it as quickly as, say, plugging it directly into an outlet, and it actually only maintained the charge of my iPad. But just the fact that it's using this technology where you basically can, you know, carry around this little device and don't have to worry about carrying a whole bunch of cables around with you, that was kind of neat, too.
So the idea is, with these fuel cells, these three pucks in the fuel cell, you carry this one device. How big is the device overall?
Oh, the device is actually only a smidge bigger in terms of length than the iPhone itself. And it's got to have room for the puck, so it's a little bit thicker.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, you only have to put one puck in at a time. I mean,
okay.
It comes with three pucks, but the package that I have, but you only have to put one puck in.
And then it plugs into the wall?
No, to charge it, you plug it into the wall, and then when you're done charging it, then you take you leave that back, you know, you basically take your cord that comes with your, you know, that comes
device,
with it.
Like your USB cord.
Yeah, and then that charger, you use that to charge your iPhone or maintain a charger.
Do you plug directly into the puck, or do you plug into the unit itself?
Into this unit, yeah.
So you got to carry it around.
It's pretty slick, and I mean, it allows you to kind of not have to carry around, you know, three or four cords or a power, look for a power outlet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, both in
well, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, when you've been in situations, you're like, okay, I need to record something or I need to take notes, and oh, there's not a single power supply anywhere to be found, especially when you're working, you know, when you're on the floor.
Now, would it be powerful enough to work with a notebook?
It doesn't seem to work with anything other than stuff that is outside those, you know, basically anything that's powered via USB. So,
okay.
Again, yeah, the smartphones, the cell phones. The iPad, it did maintain the charge, which was great, so I was able to do some work that way. But it didn't actually charge the iPad when I was testing it.
Well, it's another good workaround until Apple gives us a removable battery, which isn't happening anytime soon. Do you have more news from – we can talk more about this, can't we, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. I want to take a quick break then and come back. I've got Mike Vardy on the line. You can find all of his sage writing at productivityist.com. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
We have Mike Vardy on the phone. Mike was down at Macworld in San Francisco last week, and he is filling us in on all things Super Mac related. So what else did you see on the floor of the show, Mike, that really impressed you?
Well, as last year indicated, Adonit was on the floor again this year with some styluses, and styluses are big, but the one I really enjoyed looking at was one that was a Kickstarter project. In fact, he was there on the floor and did a fantastic job of kind of showcasing it. He gave me a little review unit here, and it's the hand stylus. It's a fantastic little device. The thing about this one that I really liked, it's retractable. So basically, it almost acts like a ballpoint pen. So So basically, it's called, like I said, the hand stylus.
Oh, okay. I see it here.
It's a retracting, rotating, replaceable tip. So what happens is it's a really lightweight, but yet it's durable. It almost looks like a ballpoint, like I said, like a retractable pen. And you can get, of course, the little replaceable tips with it, and he sells those at his booth or online as well. And it comes in a variety of colors. I got green because, you know, I'm a big fan of the color green. And the great thing about it is if you forget to retract it and or put it out there, there's no sharp edges on it, so you're not going to scratch your screen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it just feels like, you know, when you're working with it feels like you're working with a pen on your iPad or on your tablet.
So now, because I've used a bunch of different styluses on my iPad, and they've got usually very fat, broad nibs. What's the proper term for where the screen comes in contact with the pen?
I think they call it a tip. This
tip.
One's got a
okay.
4-millimeter tip. So it's the world's smallest conductive silicone rubber tip. So
the world's smallest
small.
Conductive silicone rubber tip. That sounds positively rude. So are you able to, do handwritten notes with it?
Yep. I was able to do, I had to sign a couple things when I was down there, and I did some note-taking during a couple of the sessions. I didn't go to the Ashton Kutcher session because he was there.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was pretty packed. There was a lot of demand for him.
Well, because he was doing the Steve Jobs thing, right?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, but the great thing about it was it didn't, it's not so much that I had, I've used the Studio Neeta Cosmonaut, and I've used the Adana and stuff.
Which are other styluses.
Yeah, you either feel like you're going to break it, or it's too big and clunky in your hand. So this one kind of felt like it was right down the middle. It was like it was the just right.
But Mike,
styluses.
I, with all due respect, they're $30.
Mm, it's not cheap.
Well, $30.
But trust me, when you look at it and you feel it, it's actually a very it's a high quality made product, and I mean we're seeing other products like that are coming out that are going to be in that price point that are high end. The Adonit Jot is not cheap either.
Two large pizzas, man.
True, fingers are cheaper, so you just use your finger.
Okay.
But it's a nice. So for those of you that are still like trying to get used to using a finger, you want to be able to, you know, have a stylus. This is one I would recommend if you're looking for a stylus.
Well, I'll tell you, and it being a Kickstarter project, that's pretty cool. They've got themselves up to the point that they're a real product.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good stuff. Okay. Anything else there? Or should we talk about the productivity stuff?
Well, there's one more.
Okay.
Which kind of leads into the productivity element. One of the things that I'm getting frustrated with is the fact that I've got tons of cables. That's one of the reasons I got the mm-hmm. power unit. But one of the things that Otherworld Computer or OWC is doing, and they had a booth there. They're doing something that's called the Power to You USB wall outlet. Now this is their second iteration, so they've had it out before, but this one was only in 15 amp. The one that they've had out there now it's going to have 20 amp models. It's got USB receptacles built right into your wall outlet.
Mm.
So if you're going to be, for those of us who are using, you know, iPads, iPhones, Android devices, whatever, and we're charging them, we've got these power bars below our desk, all that stuff. This stuff is fantastic. The other great thing is they're tamper-proof. So for those of us who have kids, it's not going to, my son who's two, who's luckily kind of gotten used to not having be able to put stuff in the receptacles, you can't do it with these things either. So.
That's pretty good. So basically, you just need a USB cable to plug in and charge any of your devices. You don't need the charger anymore.
Basically, it looks like a wall outlet, but it's got two little USB slots in it that also are retractable.
I like that.
Isn't that slick? It's totally, you know, instead of having all these cables everywhere, you've got things. I mean, you got things set up right for you.
And Mike, $15. You can buy two of them for the price of one of your stupid pens.
This is true. But yeah, this is and for me, I think anything like that that can kind of speed things up and make things a little less clutter in your desk or workspace is fine by me.
Oh man, cable management is such an issue, and so that's great. It just removes all those bricks from having to plug them in, and especially the ones that go sideways and use up like two or three plug holes in your power bar, and you're trying to rearrange everything and angling them in and all that sort of stuff. That's just not good.
Absolutely. So this is one of the things that and the 20 amp versions aren't out yet. They still have the older versions out, so there you can still get those. But the new versions are coming out in a variety of colors too. So you can not only be clutter free, but you can be fashionable.
So in your bedroom, beside your bed, you can replace your wall outlet with one of these. Then you can plug your devices in, put another one in your office, and you're laughing.
Absolutely.
You don't have to do them everywhere, but at $15, that looks like at least from one place. Oh, that Otherworld Computing, that's the company that does it.
Right?
Okay, that's their website that I'm looking at. Excellent. Okay, that is cool. Okay, how does this lead into productivity?
Well, I mean, when it comes to productivity, anything can make you more efficient and effective. It's always good. And, I mean, clutter is one of those things that can kind of get in your way, right?
Yes.
And what I was down there at Macworld for eventually was to do a talk for the Omni Group. The Omni Group was the company that took up, you know, a fair chunk of floor space at Macworld last year. And this year they decided to go out on their own. So they did what they called the OmniFocus setup. So we've talked about OmniFocus before. It's a Mac product, as well as, you know, you can get it for iPhone and iPad. And each one of those platforms kind of handle things a little bit differently, so they're all kind of appealing depending on you know what you really like to do when it comes to task management. So what we had is a whole bunch of these guys who used OmniFocus a lot down there to speak and put us on a panel, and then they unveiled OmniFocus 2 for Mac. So they gave it the big debut. And basically what they've done is they've made the barrier to entry far lower than ever before. I know you and I have talked about it, and it does look a bit unwieldy for the person who's jumping into it, but they've made it a lot easier to understand. They've altered the pricing, so there's going to be a standard price and a pro price. So for those who don't need all the bells and whistles, they'll be at lower price point. And the other great thing is that there were so many people, it was lined up around the block to get a first look at this piece of software. It was unbelievable. Even the Omni Group folks were floored.
So what does OmniFocus compete with?
It would compete with something on the Mac platform like Things or like Wunderlist or any of the Asana to a certain extent. In the individual task management vein, it is considered by far, I would say, the most powerful of the task management apps for the Mac, and possibly for all, you know, computing devices.
But it's designed for individuals as opposed to groups?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So it's more of an individual task management.
Because Asana, which I've got a bit of a love affair going with now, that's group task management.
Absolutely. And I've talked to Ken Case before, the CEO of Omni Group, and I've said, you know, what about collaborative task management? And he's basically said to me in no uncertain terms, we're not going down that road anytime soon. So if you're going to be, I mean, for me, what I use is, and you and I both talked about Asana before, I use Asana for collaborative task management, and I use OmniFocus for individual task management because it allows me to get a lot more of my individual stuff done. It's got the weekly review process built in. And the other cool thing about, they're just testing this thing called MailDrop. So if you don't work on a Mac at your office, let's say you're on a PC, you can send tasks to your OmniFocus inbox by using a special mail address.
Okay.
So, similar
to what we have now in Asana or in Evernote.
Yeah. Similar.
But I have to back up for a second here.
Sure.
Because shouldn't you have all of your task stuff in one place and not have multiple apps or multiple lists that you work from? Like, wouldn't it be smarter to have everything either in OmniFocus or in Asana or in Wunderlist as opposed to having them in, you know, some things in one list and some things in another? It just seems to me that that's a way to sometimes miss things.
Well, and you know what? In a lot of cases, that would be true. When it comes to collaborative and individual task management, though, there are things that Asana doesn't do as well for individual stuff as it does for collaborative, and same with OmniFocus. There are certain things for collaborative stuff it just won't do, obviously, unless you're keeping track of your own stuff. So for me, it's kind of like that whole work and home life thing. All my collaborative stuff, I know I keep in Asana. And then, of course, in OmniFocus, every day I get a task that says, check Asana. So I use OmniFocus as the guiding principle, and Asana is the one that I kind of go to for any group stuff.
Okay.
There are some features of Asana that I'm not terribly fond of when it comes to individual stuff. Mainly the fact that I don't have a local database. With OmniFocus, I have it with me at any given time. If you know, there's no
internet connection, you've still got your test.
Absolutely. No, I mean, no. The only time you need one is to sync up your data across multiple devices. But otherwise, I mean, if Asana's down, Asana's down. OmniFocus doesn't really go down.
I'm completely from left field. Is there a if this then that conduit into OmniFocus?
No, you don't have IFTT.
That's too bad, because if they did, you know where I'm going.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going. It would be great if you could take the stuff from, you know, like any group stuff and take your individual assignments and bring it in.
Yeah.
Anything like that would be awesome. But unfortunately, when you're working with a native app, you're not going to have the same stuff. Web apps are, and for some of us, you know, web apps are going to be the only way to go. And I'm a big proponent of using them. I mean, I was the one that talked to you about Asana, I think, in the first place.
Yeah, you introduced me to it.
Yeah, but when it comes to using OmniFocus, I've tried multitudes. In fact, during the panel, I was taken to task, no pun intended, about it, about my propensity to use different task managers over the history of time, and how come I've, you know, keep coming back to OmniFocus. And the real reason is scales. It scales to be as, you can make it as powerful as you need it to be, and it can be as powerful as you want it to be all at the same time. So I'm a big proponent of it, and it was just great to see so many people that were into productivity and all using it differently. And the big buzz about it was that when people from other companies heard about the lineup, they're thinking maybe we should do that next year. Maybe we should have our own event and kind of piggyback off of the Macworld event. So you may see more companies say, you know what, I'm not going to rent off the floor. I'm just going to, maybe we'll have a small booth and do a big event somewhere else.
Interesting. Now, just this was a Macworld, so the OmniFocus is a Mac-only product.
Yeah.
Just because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are in the Windows world, is there a comparable product in the Windows world as far as real pure productivity in organization?
It's difficult. There has not been a lot of development. I've actually written about this on the Next Web before. They really need to get a better task management app for Windows. Doit.im is probably the closest that you're going to get, other than using something like Asana or even IQtel, although IQtel could be very unwieldy. But Doit.im is getting a lot of notice because it looks good, and it's actually able to run on Windows. It's not just a web app. But that's an area that's sorely, you know, it's not been adopted or developed too highly on the Windows platform. And I think that's because a lot of people figured that they can just use Outlook.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is it because the new version of Outlook, of course, is just being released this week with Office 365. And I'm just wondering if that combination of, say, that and OneNote gives you the functionality.
It very well could. I haven't seen what the new edition is going to look like. I know that it was missing project management, and that's a huge thing, right? I think the task management and project management often go hand in hand. And the problem is that if you the barrier to entry, not in terms of knowledge, but in terms of price for project management on software on Windows has always been a bit of a barrier for people. The other thing is, most people, when they see Outlook, it handles email and tasks and calendar. So where do people leave most of their tasks? They leave it in email. They don't bring it to the to-do section, right? So I think that's another thing. I think that you can be more efficient and effective with Outlook if you are, you know, if you have the desire to do so. OneNote is sorely not just underused on the Windows platform, but it's also sorely under-advertised.
Oh, yes.
I mean, realistically, it's if people knew more about OneNote and used it more often, there could be a lot of value in it. But I don't know why people don't talk about it nearly as much. I mean, in all honesty, it should be the thing that's competing with Evernote.
It does. And it's got so many of the features that Evernote has, including now shared notebooks.
Notebooks. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think that if you're willing to spend some time digging, you'll find stuff. The problem is that in my opinion, the Windows environment is not an area you want to spend a lot of time digging in, because it's not all that pleasurable to dig through.
Well, I'm gonna give you an assignment then, because I spent just this last week, the Microsoft Roadshow came through, and I sat down with the product managers for Office 365 in Office, and had a really good look at it. And while there's nothing earth-shaking in it, the integration between the apps, between SkyDrive and between OneNote and Outlook is getting there. I'm not sure it's there, but it certainly gives us an option because in where they're strong, if Outlook is as good online as it has been in its desktop version, you know, they're ahead of the Mac world as far as email management.
Oh yeah, I would say that anyway.
Yes,
but I think
if the rest of it flows through, it could become the online version can become a very compelling story for both Mac and Windows users.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, I've been anticipating looking at it because I know that the Windows realm is sorely, you know, underutilized in the task management realm, and unfortunately, Microsoft has kind of owned that space for a while. We're seeing some others, like I said, DoItIM, IQtel. There are some others that are focusing on the Windows platform, and web apps, of course, are taking hold as well. So I'm curious to see what this will bring as well. And yeah, I'll definitely look into it and report back.
Good stuff. We'll do that. We'll do that next time. You can find Mike's writing at theproductivityist.com. That's productivityist.com. I spell it out because I always spell it wrong if I just try and type it in, Mike.
I get it's not the most productive website spelling out there, but it does the trick.
You know, it describes exactly what you are, sir. Mike Vardy, productivityist extraordinaire. Thanks for the report on Macworld, Mike.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Art, you did that drive to San Francisco last year, didn't you?
I did.
Was it to San Francisco all the way down to L.A.?
Well, we did end up going down to L.A.
Okay. With your buddy?
My buddy Andy.
Okay. And you were in a decent car?
We took his Honda Fit.
Okay, really?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Two people.
Yeah, and I remember you were excited because it was your first discovery of Wi-Fi.
Well, I brought down my tablet, my Samsung tablet that's currently collecting dust.
You should sell that.
I've been thinking about it. My girlfriend's been using it, playing video games on it.
Oh, okay. So you think Vardy was right on? Just it's a great idea to just drive down the coast and do that whole thing.
Are you kidding me? If you've got time, it is the best. Drive the drive down is almost as good as the destination.
That's good. That's good that you feel that way. I'm used to fairly long drives, and for some reason, it just doesn't appeal to me. Getting on a plane, being there in 2 hours, that appeals to me.
But and until you get to the Oregon coast or the California coast, and you've got the sun coming up through the mountains, and you've got the ocean spray on one side, on the other side, it's like you've seen heaven.
Good. Okay, well, I take back all my criticism and my mocking of both of you. Then I feel thoroughly thoroughly chastised.
And there's a lot of great little dives and restaurants
and stuff like that. It's kind of diners, drive-ins, and dives type
it is.
Road trip. You can cholesterol city. Yeah, good. Well, that is we have run out of time for today's show. And a reminder: drop by our website to win one of those fine Sling boxes that Greg was filling us in on. It's a great contest here on Dottotech, and we certainly thank the folks at Sling and at Keating for providing these two prizes for us. Art, I think we're done. So we will see everybody next week right here on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.